Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. So I thought today we'd talk about some of this sort of, I guess you could call it like byproduct of the Tartarian movement. And it has to do with sacred geometry being integrated into architecture, integrated into ethereal sciences, and frequency healing. It wasn't something I intended to do, but we have built a great foundation of episodes for this particular episode, from the buried history episode to the scalar technology episode, all the ethereal sciences episodes that have ever been, the Royal Raymond Rife episode, even some of the Artemis episode fed into this. But it has to do with the fact that out of all of these Tartarian pictures, and for those of you who are brand new to this, this is an era in history that's been sort of attached to this sort of race that is called the Tartarians. Now, whether or not they are directly responsible for anything I'm about to say is sort of irrelevant, because I don't think it is, at best, it's anything more than a triggering event that cascaded what we're about to talk about in this episode all around the world. The big question I want to ask you right from the very beginning: why did they build the same type of buildings for a very long time? You ever think about that? Now, the knee-jerk answer is, because trends change. And I've talked about this a long time ago, that, you know, trends didn't exist as much as they do today, meaning classical music existed for a couple hundred years, okay? It did evolve, of course, the amount of notes in a song, the chord progressions, the attacks and decays, but there's a 100 years difference between Johann Sebastian Bach and Wolfgang Mozart, and then Beethoven's after Mozart. And this is just to name three dudes, so that you understand. But somebody was really clever in looking at all the architecture, because people are just getting autistic with this stuff, aren't they? They're looking at everything. We're looking at the first phenomenon of the Tartarian movement is, how is it that when photography was finally starting to show a commercial capability, meaning people could travel the world who had these expensive cameras and take pictures of jungles, deserts, very remote countries that had very little interaction with any modern society, we find these structures stuck in the middle of freaking nowhere. And we can see from the forensics within the photographs that these structures are falling apart. Stone structures, big structures, front doors that are 20, 30, 40 feet tall for human beings that are supposedly, you know, if you listen to the old history about, you know, how tall people were, that back in Napoleon's day, he was 5'3", 5'4", somewhere in there, that was totally normal. He wasn't short. If you go look at the ancient armor that was made, I've been to a few armories with British armory, or armor that people put on when I lived in Massachusetts, when I went to England several times, you know, 5'8" would be a 6'2" guy. But 5'5", 5'6" was very common. So why build such a big door, bro? Now, some people have taken it all the way to the notion that these were giant people. Maybe, maybe not. Don't know. So that was the first phenomenon of the Tartarian thing. Plus all these amazing buildings that were built and cities that were seemingly, according to history, built overnight, like Chicago. Chicago has paintings of it in, say, like the 1830s, 1840s. But by the time the big, you know, cow kicking over the lantern propaganda fire that burns down Chicago, the pictures up until that point, which is a couple hundred out there, show a city that is old and dense. And the idea that man could have created such a dense city in just 30 years in the Americas seems to be implausible. So it seems like for some reason they want to erase history, just like the fake ice ages, right? Ice ages are there to make you stop looking backwards, to have no faith that there's any type of history that we can see today, like pyramids, for instance. They go back further than an ice age, making you think that the ice age actually collapsed completely to the equator of Earth, or that the poles changed and that everything gets wiped out all the time. I don't buy any of it. Man has been on this plane of existence for a very, very long time. And man might be a very versatile definition from gigantic human beings, of which we know existed on this planet. I probably shouldn't use the word gigantic, but, you know, I frequent several places to find new articles, new information, try to vet it as much as I possibly can for someone creating like a fake article about something. I mean, you know, if you could print something out, there's old fonts that look weird. So checking to make sure the fonts aren't repetitive, meaning, you know, an A doesn't repeat itself with the same little artifact around it. But there are old typewriters and that kind of stuff. But there are old books that write about the fact that they were finding skeletons of man as soon as we got here that were huge. It's not what this episode is going to be about. But it's just to kind of set the tone that it's like, hey, maybe what you think you know, any of us, might be so absolutely inaccurate that anyone who actually knows a lot more than we do, because they actually have the original documentation, like the people, the shysters who milked the gentleman who made the Smithsonian. Remember, a very reputable guy founded the Smithsonian, and immediately these revisionist people came in and took over the funds. The guy died and willed it to his, I believe, nephew. Of course, as soon as he dies, in the will it said it went to the people, so they just bumped the guy off, right? Got to be very careful how you write those things if you're rich. But people started looking at things that are maybe a part of this Tartarian history, but perhaps just normal buildings that were everywhere. When you start learning about something called sacred geometry, for those of you who are new, are any pattern that is symmetrical, usually top to bottom, left to right, sort of like those old, it's like looking through a kaleidoscope for one thing, but it's when you had that old thing where you had little sprockets you could put your pin in, you can go in circles. I forgot what that thing's called, the old game when we were kids. You could just literally make sacred geometry, the symbols of life, all these wild concentric circle patterns. For those of you who are familiar with putting sand on a dark surface and then vibrating it with a speaker underneath, and how it creates all those different geometric shapes depending on what frequency you put through it. Talking about that kind of stuff. Someone started to notice that the windows within cathedrals, especially, fencing, all kinds of big structures have usually one of three things that seem to attach, with a fourth kind of catalyst thing at the top. You look at cathedrals that'll have those dome ceilings at some point, like the Capitol building. Most Capitol buildings in major cities have these domes. And when you go inside, I remember going into the Capitol building in the City Hall or Capitol building in Boston, and I looked up, and it was just this amazingly beautiful circular dome, just ornate as could possibly be. And then you go in various churches, and you don't even have to go outside of a little hometown. As long as it has a Catholic church, you're usually going to see this kind of stuff. And as soon as the Catholics cease to be what they were back in the past, you start getting these normal buildings, like little warehouse buildings that are nice inside that people worship in. But these big cathedrals also bring down these domes into these arches, these configurations of, you know, four arches on each side, which makes really cool corner units where all these arches come together into a pillar. It's embedded in the wall half the time. Sometimes it comes down as a pillar. Those pillars are sometimes made of granite, by the way. But the windows have all these sacred geometry patterns in them, made of all kinds of different substances, cement, steel. There's glass inlaid in them today. Iron gates outside of these buildings also exhibit sort of a straight up and down, you know, gating, and at the top it's all these ornate circles. Those old tin roofs that have the egg and dart in them a lot, but they also have these sacred patterns in them as well. Now, some of this stuff may be homages to what we're going to actually be talking about, and some of them actually may perform the actual purpose of what the original architects of this stuff meant. But the capstone on the whole thing is that outside, on several of these type of structures, you'll have this sort of spike and a ball up there. Sort of like maybe a Wardenclyffe Tower thing. Now, some of you might blow all that off and say, ah, that's just a lightning rod that's on top of the building. I wouldn't argue with you whatsoever. But a lightning rod to accomplish what? We don't build these buildings anymore, do we? We don't build them at all. There is speculation that the buildings that are currently exist have been potentially deactivated. But let me focus in and hone in on the assertion here. Some of you already know what I'm going to be talking about. What if these buildings were nothing more than giant frequency gathering buildings? In a time when the architects, perhaps the Masons, perhaps others, were trying to figure out whether or not they could build a structure that would heal the occupants inside. Heal them with frequencies. Now, we're going to talk about Royal Raymond Rife before we move too much further. When we mention the concept of healing. Now, for those of you who didn't watch the episode, it's a dude who made a microscope by 1931 that had 50,000 power zoom. So essentially, similar to an electron microscope, except it was a microscope that you could actually watch a movie through. And he said he couldn't find the end of infinity within the human body. I'm going to say that several times as we touch this subject because I want you to remember that little Chotsky he left behind. Inside the belly of a bacteria were more little creatures shaped exactly like bacteria, behaving like bacteria. And he kept looking in the belly of that and the belly of that and the belly of that, and he kept finding these creatures. And they went from multi-celled beings down to little crystalline proteins. So imagine me holding a little version of you in the between my thumb and my index finger. It's a little version of you that's a millimeter tall. Fully functional. Acts exactly like you. Can think like you. Can behave like you. Dance like you. Laugh like you. But you're sitting there going, now wait a minute. I'm made of like cells that divide and do mitosis. How the hell could there be a tiny version of me? Outside of some science fiction, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing, right? Well, if you start building the same structure out of smaller things like crystalline proteins, you could technically get the same exact thing. It's just going to be made of something different. When we build gigantic robots for those parades in Europe, right? I forgot the place that does it every year. Really creepy ass shit, man. But what do? We build it out of steel, giant robot kind of stuff, and we may veneer it to make it look more human, but in the end, we build it out of something different to mirror what we are. Biology seems to do the same exact thing. Why do I mention that? Well, we're going to talk about healing. And anyone who's doing a little bit of math in their head would go, yeah, but dude, it's just a bunch of like echoing frequencies inside of a structure. It can't be that powerful no matter how you slice it. Maybe if you're inside, when a lightning bolt strikes the thing up above, you get a little jolt in the room, right? Everyone feels a little static cling in their hair, sticks out. I wouldn't argue with you whatsoever. The question is the physics required to actually shatter the little invaders in our bodies. They're not really invaders. They're part of the ecosystem. But these infinitely small things, submicron things. Imagine submicron, right? So just go to the power of 10, keep dividing by 10 all the way down. You may not need a lot of energy to zap something deep within the body that feeds the thing that's the one that Royal Rife tried, well, Royal Rife absolutely successfully annihilated. So let's use three stages of the power of 10. A bacteria is the number one big unit, right? It's the biggest one we're going to talk about. Now go 1/10 that, and you get into the Bacillus typhosus, or BX1 or BX2, that Royal Raymond Rife was zapping with his little machine, bursting its membrane, thus disabling what it is, thus letting the body heal from cancer, polio, anything that the body got sick from. But let's go one step down below that. potentially what the K-Media was supposed to be, the food that this middle tier is going to be consuming to survive. We go one more step down. So two orders of magnitude down from a bacteria. And so now we have stuff that's divided by 10 divided by 10. 1/100th the size of a bacteria. Now maybe, the healing that's necessary is much more fundamental. They're killing the very diet that these BX1 and BX2 would consume. Royal came in at the midpoint of our little example here. But perhaps a cathedral in the right configuration, any building, a temple, was more of a hospital than a temple. And so we have to look at the rituals also that were conducted within these rooms. Now, I was raised Catholic. Up until about 8 years old, my father one morning said, "I don't think I want to go to church. We've moved away from our hometown, so the churches are weird in the city." And my mom said, "Okay, that's fine." And I said, "Hey, I don't want to go either," and she let me stay. And that was the last time I went to church without my own participation, minus maybe something for my grandparents on Christmas or what have you, Easter. But when I was going to these Catholic churches, you know that they behave a lot different than all the other churches out there. They sing in these interesting notes that they seem to hold a note. They sing in this note and it's a da 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 da. Right? Maybe two or three notes total. And they sing in choirs. They sing in those few notes for every little hymn that they're singing. They don't sing hymns. They sing these sort of ritualistic, sort of Tibetan vibrations. Tibetans figured it out, but they were messing with the inner chamber of their brain to stimulate the pineal gland. That's a little bit different. That's a higher consciousness frequency that they were doing. But perhaps those notes, when you brought your congregation inside this church, maybe even if you built it out of marble, what it's doing is it's refracting all that stuff down to the human body. Maybe refract, or I should say reflect. The other day, for instance, this is kind of a funny thing. I ate a salad. And it came in one of those plastic containers where the salad was too big for the plastic container. I mean, it fits, but you couldn't eat it out of that because you got to mix up your dressing. So what do you got to do? You got to go get a bowl that's much bigger, pour all that stuff in there, pour your stuff and mix it up, and then you can eat it, right? And everything has a little bit of the dressing on it. So I ate about 2/3 of it, but it was so huge, I just put the rest in the refrigerator. Didn't think anything of it. I took it out 4 or 5 hours later to finish it off. And I noticed something strange had happened. And when I figured it out, I laughed my ass off. The salad was absolutely the way I left it, except for one attribute. In the very center of the bottom of the bowl, all the lettuce had ice on it. Just a little bit of ice. Can you guys figure out why the center had ice, but the rest of it was fine? Because the shape of the bowl, just like a radar dish, anything that's conical, it reflects to the center point, tangent to the curve, right, man? Or perpendicular curve, excuse me. So it pushes everything to the center. That's why radar dishes do what they do. And yeah, you can shape them a little oddball, and then you can get them to kind of like an egg, and you can get them to go in a slightly different direction like most of the dishes on your house to get cable. But I realized that putting this straight up without any cover over it, all of the cold that fell down from the chilling device was hyper-focusing on the center of the bowl, freezing the lettuce that was in the center. So now I want you to take that principle, turn it upside down, and make it out of the beautiful arches and domes that are in these buildings. Politicians and the congregation of a church. Now today, we don't think they care about us that much. Back in the day, they were trying to spread their seed. Back in the day and today, they try to protect themselves physically. So, of course, wouldn't you want to be in a building that is literally designed to harvest perhaps the ethereal winds out of the universe? Perhaps just the tone of a conversation bouncing up and coming back down upon you kills that very tiny K-medium food supply for the B1 and BX algorithms or you know, crystalline creatures that feed the cancer. They nibble at all of our bodily cells. So I want to get into these areas I noted. The dome. The arches. The windows that seem to be these sacred geometry patterns. And of course the capstone circular object on the top. That seems to be sort of the catalyst. It may take lightning, but it may just be harvesting a little bit of ether to then come down and gets hyper-focused on the occupants of the building. Let's talk about what each one of the functions of these architectural possibilities might be in terms of this conversation, healing the occupants inside. Well, let's start from the very, very top. The little doodad on the top of the building. And there are all kinds of different shapes. If you look at mosques, for instance, sometimes those circular spheres that are in a spike at the top are actually fairly large, proportional to the tower that's coming down. But sometimes they're maybe the size of a basketball. I mean, I know it looks a lot smaller, but they're way up there in the air. And so when you get up to them, they're a lot bigger than you think. Well, that might just be a touch point, a shape of something that immediately vectors down whatever it's catching up there. But let's talk about the domes, the next stage down of this ecosystem. Now, you might just go, oh, well, the dome is just a dome, is a dome, whatever. Let's just talk about dome shapes. But if you've been in any of these buildings and looked up at the domes, just look them up. These domes are so elaborately designed, it seems as if the first layer of experimentation for this theory is in the dome itself. Way beyond any concept of ornamentation, simply to make it look beautiful. There is M.C. Escher patterns of all kinds of things, from hexagonal boxes, square boxes, octagonal boxes. Sometimes the symbol of life is right there in the ceiling, just underneath that little post that's up there on the top outside. These domes have infinite models, respectively. It's almost like all of them are a little bit different. Maybe it has a different effect. Maybe different evolutions of the technology just kept growing and growing. Like when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, my hometown had a company called Birdview, another one called Eagle. They were satellite dish companies for your home. But they're the big kind, the big, you know, 4 or 5 foot dish. And boy, you know, if you have one of those, Eagle was black with mesh, and the other one was white, just really pretty looking. And when they started manufacturing these things in the millions in my hometown, I mean, literally the dudes who invented it were in my hometown, it started making me think about the physics of what I was looking at. As I was leaving in 1987, they said, oh yeah, they're coming out with this new one that's a shape about the size of a large dish that you might eat off of. And I thought to myself, how the hell could you possibly do that? You need more surface space and what are you talking about, like an oval kind of dish? I didn't figure it out until I saw one and I did the math in my brain. I was like, oh, that's super simple. And that's what all the dish network things look like in America. So now imagine that the domes, based on when they were made, perhaps based on their purpose, I'm thinking it's probably all healing. Healing in potentially two spectrums. You're sick and you're being healed, or you're not sick and I'm keeping you very healthy. But you know how technology works. If it started way back in, say, you know, the Egyptian time frame, or right after that, right? I mean, we can kind of see some evolution of architectural specificity between the Egyptians, the Greeks, and the Romans. We didn't start seeing domes for a little while there. But again, all the years that these structures are claimed to have been built, maybe all those are wrong. It doesn't really matter. We can see the evolution. You have a real simple dome first, and then as they realize, oh my gosh, we took this, you know, someone figured out this flower shape thing, the circular concentric circle thing. They put that in the ceiling, they put it in a wall, and man, when you look, you do the divining rod thing, oh my gosh, they're just swinging all over the place, all kinds of great energy being harnessed. We're going to get into the physics of it, at least in a light manner, before we're over, but let's just keep going with the domes. For the domes that have the symbols of life directly above, I think that is a much different, more direct method of harnessing the energy that's going to come through that shape. and splash onto the occupants down below. But again, anything that has an overall dome is going to vector all that stuff directly down to a center point. Maybe not exactly where the occupants are sitting. It may be a lot higher over your head because it should go to the center of the curve. But perhaps that's all you need to do is get it stimulated in the room, because all the other shapes are going to push in other vectors of energy, all guiding it down to the occupants and pews, the Senate in a Roman building. As far as the shapes that I've seen several times that are embedded into the walls of these domes, as soon as we get to how these things might actually be working, your mind's going to blow up. I think you're going to see a lot of opportunities for how this energy's moved around. The arches, the next thing down from the dome. Now, obviously, arches are a structurally amazing thing. You know, the strength of pi is tremendous. It's even more powerful than, I think, a triangle. Triangles are amazingly powerful structures. But it's this idea of, here comes some weight, and the whole thing is evenly distributed down to the pillars. No matter how much stuff you put on top, it's coming down to the pillars. It vectors all that force, and it has to do with the way that ether creates mass. Because on the ethereal level, all mass is water. It's all moving constantly. It's not, nothing holds still in the universe. Nothing. Okay? We'll put a pin in that for a split second. In my just observations over the last several months, it would appear to me that the arches are more of a conduit, a method of actually moving the energy within the room. Now, there's probably a foundational thing here as well that I have completely overlooked at this point. We'll get to that in a second. The other one are the windows. The windows that happen to be usually a piece are surrounded by an arch as well. Now, when you look at the windows that are shaped like these flower shapes, okay, and there's all kinds of elaborate nature to them. Again, a lot of them are carved out of a marble. Some of them are out of like sort of a sandstony kind of thing. But apparently, some of them have been made out of metal. As Tesla noted, and as we do think that the accurate reinterpretation of the pyramids being power supplies have suggested, the ether, which is definitely splashing down from above, also will be going in an orbit around any type of object that exists. It's your magnetic field, basically. So there should be, if you have a wall perpendicular to the ground, there should be ether definitely on a different vector coming through the windows, just like wind. And it should almost be perfectly parallel to the surface of the earth as it comes through the door. Now, we know because we get pushed down that ether is actually pushing on us from above. Start mixing those two together. Hopefully some of you have been paying attention to the scalar technology episode, realize, oh my gosh, one looks like the magnetic wave and the other one looks like the dielectric wave. And as soon as they splash into each other, maybe they're creating electromagnetism right there in the room. And because this structure is so policing the methods, just like kind of Plato going through one of those little molds, right? Those little cutouts. Well, here comes the ether. Here comes magnetism. Here comes dielectric energy. And you're sitting inside the room, getting all energized, getting fixed from potentially every conceivable vector of energy coming into this room. From the dome itself, harvesting it down to you, to the side winds of what you're made out of. The arches could simply be a method of organizing sort of the pathways of how this energy would move around. And again, the voice creating a sound wave, which is a very scalar pulse, you could say, is going to start, you know, moving around the room and coming down on you. The other thing that you might spiritually feel is this amazing kind of oneness with the universe when you're inside of these rituals, which then could be usurped and attached to a story to give the story more credit. But if you just talked about life and what have you, good wisdom of the world, you might feel exactly the same way. And just feel like, I don't know why, but when I go in that room with other people, you think it's other people like you, well, at least they're not causing a riot inside, but you sit down, you meditate, and there's someone with a voice, and then here comes the choir singing from a couple little choir boys to a whole chorus singing. You start to feel amazing. Now, I don't know if a normal song, a normal hymn, would have the same effect, because that's sort of chaotic. You got a lot of people that can't sing in tune. I think it's interesting that when we hear people sing out of tune, it sort of has this ill effect on us, right? We're like, ugh, God, you know, is that a friend's birthday party? And when I was a kid, everybody could sing happy birthday in tune. And now nobody can sing in tune. It's like everyone's tone deaf. I don't know where these karaoke people come from that can hold a note and sing like Adele, because they never come to any of the birthday parties I've ever been to. And they create these tone deaf birthday songs at restaurants now because all the help can't be reliably accountable for singing in tune. It's strange, right? But perhaps not singing in tune, because singing and music has such an effect on the human body for either positive or negative effects, depending on what kind of music you're listening to and what decade you're listening to it, right? Especially our sort of death frequency music that we have today. We feel it, but only subconsciously. And because all of the stuff we're talking about in this episode is just absolutely not in the average lexicon of the brain. We're just feeling everything and we're not thinking anything through. Now, the foundation of a building is obviously a very important component to the whole thing. There's different ways of interpreting these foundations, and most of us, me being definitely one of them, we don't exactly know what are in the foundations of most of these cathedrals. We know that some of these places probably have secret little Indiana Jones chambers underneath for God knows what purpose. Could have started out okay, could have started off bad, don't know. We know that the plateaus of Egypt that hold up the Giza Plateau has an electrical honeycomb catacombs of water in it to store the energy. Okay. We know that, say, like the Parthenon in Greece is on this mountain, which we thought was a organic mountain because on the side of the mountain, it's still rock. But every time they dig down to do a little restoration, a little reinforcement to save the Parthenon, they're finding history and new structures. And that's part of the Tartarian theory is that, look, how come these cities, like New York especially, which aren't that old, as soon as they started digging out in the 50s, 60s, and 70s to put in a nice sewage system, they find entire cities underneath the city holding up the current skyscrapers. And the wild thing that nobody ever mentions is, like, they're built so strong and so accurate, they're holding up the city above. I mean, it's remarkable. Not every single area of New York, not every single area of every major city, but enough to go, what, right? Now, there are cities like Venice that have a history of having, you know, several layers of buildings and then floods happen and then I have to live in boats and that kind of stuff. So there's some that we can kind of go, okay, well, maybe that's not the Tartarian theory that we're mostly concerned about. Before we go into potentially what these foundations could be contributing to the algorithm, I know that a bunch of you just thought about mud flooding. Again, mud flooding, you know, it's probably, again, you know, like for those of you who study Morgellons, Morgellons is admittedly the wrong name for what is actually happening to the human body, if indeed that is a real thing. Someone looked up an old condition from the 1800s and because her husband died of this weird thing, and she accidentally named it the wrong thing. So mud flooding has to have the same sort of thing, because when they built big cities, they weren't big at first. They were small at first. And so people built buildings at all different levels in major cities, especially like London. And in the 1850s, it's well documented in the printed newspapers and history books that there was a point where they said, okay, we've got to level this city out because the new area is all level, but all this extraneous areas that went first hundreds and hundreds of years ago are all at cockeyed levels. And so because we want to build roads where horse and carriage can go, and then eventually trains and a bunch of other transportation, we're going to have to level this out. We just have to. And they told all the occupants that owned all these homes, from citizens that lived there to business owners that worked there, You are responsible for raising the earth around your building. So when we come by with the street at this exact level, talk to your surveyor. You've been given notice. If you don't raise it up, we'll raise it up for you, and we're going to charge you for raising it. So take care of business. And a lot of homes lost their first floors. Some of them lost more than the first floor, depending on where they were. For those of you who are familiar with the levee break in Louisiana, where the levee broke, that area where all those people lived was 30-plus feet below sea level. And because they didn't raise it, just like England did in the 1850s, it flooded horribly as soon as that levee was blown up by a helicopter. Okay? So, not all mud flooding is what you think it is. The other one is mining towns in the United States had a ton of mud flooding because they built in desert areas where there's no forests to root and protect the mud that's higher than the town from running off down into the town, a natural process that they never noticed until they built a building there, like a hotel or something. And of course, it's running down every time it rains, just a little bit, to the point where you lose the first story entrance of the back of the building, whereas the front, which is not being hit by it, you could still walk in the door. But eventually it did surround the building, raise up, and they had to make the first floor a basement and make the second story the entrance to these buildings. So don't get caught up with those two scenarios, because those are two well-documented things. Again, they're trying to sucker punch a lot of us with these bad theories. But there may be some other examples where, again, there's credibility. So you need to move it out. Like chemtrail planes constantly get photographs of the test planes they do with the water tanks where all of the seats are. And they're all little tiny tubes connected to them. Why are they connected? Because they fill it with one source, right? You don't have some guy going, okay, next one. No, they just daisy chain all these things together, and as water flows, like a capacitor, it's filling up the tank. As soon as that tank's full, it runs off to the next tank, and it's a natural process. They do that because they're simulating the weight of a human being sitting in that location. Even though three human beings sit in a row, two tanks side by side make up the weight of an average three-person occupancy. So that's why you can have good people walking through those planes. Pictures are taken of them. They're like, see, that dude's in on the whole thing. No, a chemtrail plane has patented gigantic tanks to take up the whole fuselage, which just with usually a little area where the computers are controlling the dispersion of the chemical, barium oxide and aluminum oxide. But I digress. Back to the foundations of our sacred structures. Now, the foundations are usually pretty amazing with at least Catholic churches. Regardless if there's a basement, which there usually is, they're thick marble, thick. I don't think I've ever seen a true concrete floor in an average Catholic cathedral. It's usually marble, 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 right? Remember when I told you about the analysis of the Great Pyramids? It's made of three stones, two different limestones, and then red granite. The outer limestone is non-conductive. The inner limestone, which is all we see today, besides that little capstone area on the Great Pyramid, it's made of very conductive limestone, meaning it can gather up electricity. But the corridors were made of red granite, something the geologists refer to in electrical manner as liquid rock. Not because it's soft and pliable, but because apparently, electrically, it actually has a valence of conductivity that moves like a circuit bus. So if you want to route electricity that you're gathering from this limestone, 2.3 to 2.5 million rocks of this stuff, you want to route it down to your catacomb underneath inside your foundation, that's one of the best ways to do it. So anytime you see these giant castles, right, Neuschwanstein Castle in southern Germany, the guy's got, blue jade columns. Well, I don't even know what an exotic rock like that has in terms of electrical properties. Since the purpose of this whole building, if we are onto something, okay, is to gather up, focus, and beam down onto the people this healing frequency, maybe it's just a psyop to get everyone to be in a state of suggestibility such that when the scripture's told to them, they believe it. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's not even healing. I think it is, but could be achieving both goals. But you don't want your foundation to absorb this great effort. You want it to reflect, or if nothing else, to create some sort of harmony, some harmonic within the room and not disturb anything. Isn't it interesting when you go in these buildings that if you were to talk, that's why we're always quiet in churches, man, it just reflects around that place like crazy. Just like being in some planetarium. I don't know if you guys know this, but if you ever go to a dome planetarium, there's an interesting experiment you can do. And most of you have been a planetarium of experiences. You sit down with your family member, but especially if you're close to one of the edges, and you can hear someone talking on the other side of the planetarium. As long as they're in line with you, they could be whispering to their family member, and you could hear it as if they're whispering in your ear, because that sound wave is scalar, and it goes, boom, right across the dome, straight into your ear. And it's instantaneous, like scalar technology. Funny, huh? So I'm assuming, at a minimum, that the floors being made solid would at least encapsulate this entire harmonic to keep it very active and very powerful. Now, there could be a lot of substructure that I'm just unaware of, where the arches that are coming down and routing that energy are actually connected down below and creating a circular motion through the architecture itself. That could be the case as well. But now let's talk about the windows, because someone realized something about the windows. I'll put it this way. There's been photographic evidence, and I hope I can find most of these photos. I know the place that I get most of these photos from, but it's months and months back on the feed, and it may be very difficult because it's on Telegram. But some of these windows were built without any enclosures in them, meaning these windows were open to the air with these crazy sacred geometry patterns on them. And then at a future point, they were filled with stained glass. Sometimes it's two-tiered. Sometimes it's the one outside is still open to the air, and the one back a few feet used to be open to the air, but they put decorative glass in them at some future point. I've told you guys several times, I believe that the pyramids had the external stone removed, not because someone was stealing stone. That's the most ridiculous theory on planet Earth. We're talking about angular stone that could only be the outer stone of the pyramid. You can't take angular, you know, stones home and build yourself a house. What are you going to do? They're all going to be sliding off each other. It doesn't make any sense. You could say you knock it down to something else, but if you got the energy to steal a stone, then you got the energy just to steal it out of a quarry. If the pyramids, the Bent pyramids and all the other pyramids in South Egypt, which there are hundreds of, some of them exploded, have to do with this plasma explosion, which we have plenty of evidence. Again, there's a wave of explosion in southern Egypt, northern Africa, which knocked down a bunch of statues, boiled quartz, you know, which is 2,000 degrees Celsius, as I always say. There's evidence that this siphoning of power out of the bowels of the earth using a pyramid on top may have gotten out of hand. And so they turn off all those pyramids in Giza because it's like, oh gosh, this is like the capital where all the rich pharaohs live. Let's get this thing deactivated because a bunch of people just died south of here. So if you have all these buildings that we no longer build anymore, I mean, tell me if you know, other than the place in Madrid, right? The Gaudi Church, which, oh my God, talk about a satanic thing that thing is. If you have all these cathedrals out there, but now all of a sudden those that were for the people are now against the people, just saying, maybe. You put all the stained glass in the holes. Hence, perhaps, maybe, knocking down its overall force. Maybe just knocking it down enough that it's not really doing what it used to do. And of course, I understand that elements get into the buildings through these openings and what have you. But let's talk about how this might actually be doing what it's doing through the movement of what is the entire universe, this ethereal wind that's out there. I did a episode, oh my God, 6 years ago. I think the episode's called The Physics of Symbology, something like that. But it had to do with the fact that all these people who tattoo all this satanic crap all over their body, and they wear satanic stuff all the time, necklaces and all kinds of pentagrams and stuff. The basis of that was that as energy moves through these shapes, just like those ice crystals that the Japanese guy froze while a group of people were thinking a certain thought at the ice crystal, and love was the most beautiful ice crystal you'd ever seen, and hate turned into this horrific, you know, demonic, black, weird stuff. Those frequencies are very important. But don't tell me you haven't been in a situation where everything went really sour and you didn't feel it in the air. You know, prison inmates talk about anywhere they are in prison. They said you can feel the air when something bad's about to happen, because everybody in the room is having all of their adrenaline hit their body and they are turning it into Satan's game. And they're about to throw down and shank each other and fight and all this other stuff. And the smart people, they could feel that because they're enlightened and they get the hell out of the room in 2 seconds. You may not even consciously feel it, but a lot of them know that game. I've seen conversations on Fresh Out channel on YouTube with Big Herc 916. And he talks about that, man. And he was talking to a buddy of his, and they both agreed. They're like, yeah, man, you know. And Big Herc was talking about being in a cafeteria once, and he said the energy just got badness. And it was the yard just right outside the doorway he's standing in. He just went to the yard, and all of a sudden, boom, some horrific thing happens in the cafeteria. Whole place gets locked down. Everyone's on their stomachs, right? So the frequency of love and hate is very specific. So anytime you shape mass, you are controlling how the universe keeps it together. So say you have a big block of stone and you cut it in an H. And maybe the stone itself has some conductivity to it anyway, right? You know, magnetic stones and what have you. And you start cutting it, and then you start, you know, creating a sub H, maybe a relief H on the outside, like those rocks in South America. That when you put a compass up to the H, the compass just spins in circles like crazy, because that H rock has this shape that is shaping the splatter of ether off of it, creating this chaotic magnetic field around it. Can you imagine that the way they move these stones from point A to point B to build Machu Picchu and a lot of other places, a lot of pre-Inca places, was they simply laid down these H's all in consecutive interlocking H formats, and it creates a mag lift for certain types of rock, okay, and you just push them effortlessly across the highway. You pick up the H from the back and move it to the front like a recycled object, right? And it just, you can just keep going as far as you need to go. It may not be weightless, but it may be a lot lighter than lifting some 60-ton rock. So now imagine that's a primitive method of shaping a rock to control the magnetic poles such that you can get a lot of the ether to bounce off these rocks and thus push up to counteract the ether pushing down. Boom. You can move a lot of stuff with that technology. But now let's say we advance up several tens of thousands of years from when those things were moved. And forget the history books, all right? And now we figured out, wow, you know how when you're a kid, you dig in sand or you make a little pyramid and with mud or sand at the beach or whatever. Well, it's a natural shape. Some of these things are natural shapes that human beings come up with. Hell, even the swastika is something that a kid creates a plus sign. He's just messing around. They used to call it the windmill, and the reverse version for the Native Americans meant peace. But there's a lot of shapes that just human beings are messing around, and they serendipitously, accidentally create these shapes. But now, what if you have a society that's pretty enlightened because there's not a lot of distraction? They don't go to these American schools or these European schools that do nothing more than shut off their minds. So they feel the universe a lot more than we do today. They did back in the day, let's just say. The ley lines, the meridians of the earth, they felt them. So smart people start realizing, well, we're going to build some shapes and I'll put them in the room and I'm just going to let it kind of talk to me. The harmonic of energy coming through. They may or may not understand what's going on in terms of ethereal winds. For them, it might be magic. It might be God. They may actually turn a rock into an effigy of God, just saying, wow, when I make that rock, I feel really good. A lot of energy. Very peaceful. I want to help others. Man, this other rock over here, shaped like a pentagram, I want to murder. I want to kill. I don't care about anybody but myself. And so it polarizes the world into two groups, basically. Well, once you crack open that theory to the inventing minds of the past, which because of the Tartarian Gilded Age especially, we can see unbelievable architecture from the past. I mean, mind-blowing. Pyramids being very amazing because they're gigantic, and if their power station is truly phenomenal. But some of the Gilded Era, you know, mansions built in New York. Was it the guy that built the $200 million mansion in New York, and he only lived in it for like 14 years, I think, and maybe even like 9 years, then he sells it off to some guy who builds a department store in the same spot when there was plenty of land in the area. Plenty of land in the area to build his department store, where he wouldn't have had to have paid tens of millions of dollars to get to knock a building down and build another building. These buildings were ceremoniously destroyed because I think they had way too much technology being revealed, and the people that wanted them are long gone, so who cares? Or they don't even care. I'm not going back to New York. New York's really a pain in the ass to live in. Maybe they thought that. I'm not sure. Those of you who study sacred geometry, you know that there's a lot of different shapes, just like crystals, that have different properties, different effects, supposedly, on anyone who's around those shapes. Crystals, which you're raised to think that crystals are bullshit. You are. You're those are hippie things. Oh, yeah. What's this little thing on your chest going to do for your whole body? Well, if you wear it on your chest, well, one, you got it right on your heart. And it's a central point where blood is basically routed through the heart that pumps out to every extremity in your body. So maybe if you had a healing agent right on your chest that's taking maybe light from the outside, and a crystal only exudes a certain frequency. That's the piezo effect, right? You can take chaotic static and put it on a crystal, and it's going to unify it because it has to. The crystals are stacked up a certain way. And again, through experimentation and an older culture that could listen, or maybe even a modern culture that could study the actual healing properties of a crystal, they know. They know what it can do. So they build buildings out of this stuff. They build palaces out of this stuff, castles out of this stuff. Yeah, of course, there are castles that are more fortressy things. But haven't you ever seen the star formation fortresses that were built all throughout history, all over the world? And they tell us today, okay, that these star-shaped fortresses were built for strategic reasons. And I've even seen documentaries on the History Channel 20 years ago that talked about, okay, when, you know, you build this building out of a bunch of star-fitting things, no one could quite get the advantage on the building. And then historians who know about, you know, old weapons are like, bullshit. You know how they took over a fortress most of the time? They just lined up a bunch of cannons and blasted at a particular wall. And once you lose one wall, you lose the whole place. But they also used to fire cannonballs and all kinds of other objects through trebuchets and catapults and all kinds of stuff into the center of the city just to kill off the population, to knock down the infrastructure inside. There was really no place to hide the king except in the ground, some dugout. Because if you built a big giant tower in the center, they're going to hit it. They're going to hit it just because. Trebuchets, which, you know, I did hear one person tell me that they thought trebuchets were a modern invention that has been simply injected into the past. For everything else that we've seen that was ingenious in the recent past that has been pushed around in history in terms of the year it existed, it almost seems as if the trebuchet would be a very trivial weapon based on the intellect of the individual. But, of course, people have to want to fight wars to create these machines, right? But these star fortresses, which have all kinds of elaborate designs, but the most basic design it's very prominent all around the world is a square, okay, not a rectangle, usually a square, even if the coastline knocks off one part of the square. But at the very corners, they seem to have this little diamond sort of capstone-y pyramid looking thing that then comes back to the walls. So you have a pyramid, and then the lower levels connect to one of the walls. People are now looking at these differently. They're saying, okay, well, what stones comprise these fortresses, and are they conductive with electricity? Doesn't have to be, because anything that's mass is going to direct the flow of the natural energy in the universe. So potentially, as has been suggested recently through the Tartarian movement, which is just a great little movement, right? These fortresses might have been designed to heal the occupants inside on a city level. We know that cities are built with interesting architecture from above. Here's what's interesting. So the capital of the United States of America is Washington, D.C. It's a little sovereign corporation, right? And we didn't notice this until we had, you know, basically inexhaustible access to the streets from above. I mean, you could have bought a map when you're, say, in the early 90s or before like Google Maps comes out. But now we can just look down and we see all kinds of crazy shit, don't we? Tons of pentagrams in the streets, owls, the Capitol building's in the belly of an owl, standing on a pyramid. One side of the pyramid is streets, and then it turns into a railroad track. The other one's a street. Tons of stuff. Paris, the Arc de Triomphe, is in this giant illuminated sun. But the Arc, this amazing object, has been built all around the world. There's a bunch of those things everywhere. Now, there's a symbology to them, of course. They're basically saying, we are the Club of Rome, and we own this place. Or, excuse me, the Club of 300, right? Club of Rome is in Russia, I believe. The bankers of the world wanted to stamp the United States of America with the Statue of Liberty, but they were smart and pushed it into the Jersey Bay, locking it out of land ownership and putting it in its own maritime law. And then, of course, everybody goes to Ellis Island and toast to America. The obelisk, another big object. What looks like the obelisk would be actually a very interesting device to gather up ethereal winds and route it straight down. The pyramid on top would be the ultimate vector of how this would actually get sucked into the earth, because just as lightning wants to go down to the earth to go back home through the plasma core inside the earth, an obelisk itself made of conductive limestone, maybe even two limestones, one conductive, one non-conductive, could be routing it down to something we don't even pay attention down in the foundation anymore. In modern times, it's just a stamp on the ground. That's all it is. Washington Monument was a mason stamp. It's two factions fighting over the possession of the earth. But imagine that. You are a church in western regions of the earth. It is the most powerful church for a few thousand years. People go in, and they have these experiences for real. I've definitely been to a number of Catholic churches and cathedrals just for touring purposes, and I've definitely been at a bunch of the normal modern churches in America, which are basically very nicely outfitted warehouses. You can have an experience mentally in both those, but I tell you what, you walk into an old cathedral and there's just something that starts happening to you the moment you walk in the room. You can even be an atheist and walk into some of these buildings and just start going, oh my gosh. You start having this sort of out-of-this-world experience. It might be due to the structure of the building itself. So I want you to recap there for a split second. Think about the universe basically being a giant ocean of very, very thin water, okay? And it's flowing through everything. Unlike, say, let's say we take one of those windows, it's in a box of marble, and we take it to the ocean itself, right? And the ocean's going in and out of those openings, right? Well, one, we know microscopically in our brain, we can't see exactly where the water is unless we put a dye there to see it kind of flow through those holes, that the holes are actually constraining the way that, you know, the water Play-Doh goes through this little aperture, right? Most of us have Play-Doh when we're little kids, put some in, make a star, make a circle, make whatever, right? Spaghetti. All right. But now imagine the stuff that we're talking about actually is the stuff that orbits and creates the actual stone itself. And because the stone is actually there, and that there's stone and then there's not stone, where there is not stone, you're getting an unbelievable 50 times the speed of light material going through the opening. And where there is stone, based on what kind of stone it is, you might want to, if you know those kind of things, reanalyze the entire thing based on what these windows are actually made of. Is it iron? Is it marble? What kind of marble is it, right? Is it granite? Take a look. Compare notes, right, between the different types of substances. Modern ones versus ancient ones. Ancient ones are most likely more accurate to this algorithm than the ones that are built today to sort of pay homage to the older versions, right? But you're talking about a bunch of essentially electromagnetic poles, but since it's not necessarily conductive, it may not generate anything that you could actually put a voltage meter on and sense. Many of you have seen the experiments with magnets and copper, especially like copper tubing. Some people take a dowel of wood and they wrap copper wire around it. Pretty thick copper wire. It's going to hold its position when this is over. They wrap it pretty tight. Then they pull the dowel out. So you have this nice spring-looking thing of copper, and they put a magnet in there at a particular orientation, and it jets through the copper. Okay. Well, that's an example at a very macro level, so you can see how these poles work together. It's all ether, man. And so you take a little bit, and you build it into a giant structure, and then you attach it together algorithmically with a little thing on top of a dome. The dome and arch and the windows. There's probably a lot more to this if I could actually just go visit Notre Dame and before I visited this episode. But it all could be very algorithmic. We know that a lot of cathedrals are built into overall floor patterns, right? A lot of them are built in plus signs that are out there where they got enough real estate to do it. Minimum, they're built in sort of like these straight box lines, right? Where the ribs of these arches and these windows are cascading like the ribcage of a human being with perhaps a dome at one end. Okay. They may have figured out the domes aren't even that required because potentially just the arch itself, like the Arc de Triomphe, Notre Dame, excuse me. Maybe that's all you need. But you remember that big, was it made of lead or iron or something, that the big spear that was at the top that melted when it caught on fire? Getting rid of what looked like the thing that was the catalyst to the entire building, disabling it, perhaps ending an era. I mean, we know at least one first lady that was on a boat drinking a glass of wine because she was told this whole thing was going to happen. She went to Paris so she could be on a boat to watch that thing burn. And we caught her because the glass had the Notre Dame burning in it. And she was definitely there because the press was covering it. Let's toast to this end of an era, IPetGoat 2. Remember in the animated thing, in case you didn't see it, IPetGoat 2, look it up, the very end of that animation, Notre Dame goes down. The pyramids go down. You ever wonder why the pyramids were hit by meteorites at the end of that special? As this sort of all-purpose Jesus, Antichrist, is on the canoe. Because those were the advanced civilizations built by the people, for the people, to help the people, and it's all being destroyed. The mesmerized savior on the canoe, which is the boat with Anubis, taking him over the river Styx sort of thing. It's all there to return control, potentially, is what the message, I'm sure, is, if you watch it. I've seen it dozens and dozens of times. I'll sort of end it like this, so that there's an analogy we can all kind of latch onto. Before I walked up the stairs to get where I am right now, I watched another one of those compilation videos of the dude in New York who has now made a channel interviewing the youth of America and asking them questions to see if they know the answers. Very basic questions. What's 3 times 7? When was the War of 1812? How many states are in the United States of America? What country is Hawaii a part of? None of which these kids can get right. I mean, they took a kid who's got probably $500 to $1,000 worth of crap on his body before the cell phone, before the skateboard, and they don't know anything. They are so completely ignorant, if not stupid, that they... Can you imagine the kids in these interviews conceiving of anything that we talk about on this show? This show and your comments everywhere I get them are orders of magnitude. Orders meaning several powers of 10 over the average brain trust in a kid in New York City. Are there geniuses in Eric? Oh yeah, sure. Geniuses everywhere. Are there dipshits everywhere? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But we have a whole new civilization of kids who are the most retarded human beings you've ever seen in your life, which means their brains have been slowed down and they don't know anything. And they don't seem to have any problem with it, but boy, they got a lot of activism all over them. They want to tell us adults what's right and wrong, but they don't even know how many states are in the country that they live in. The War of 1812, they asked the guy, well, when was the War of 1812? One woman said, 1826. The other guy said, well, which Civil War? You know, you got, you tell me which one you want to talk about. I think it was in Iraq, about 91. Another guy said, isn't that World War II? Okay, why mention that? Well, the place where maybe we become them, and today us, okay, the ones that are over these kids that don't know anything, were the people that made all the sacred geometry, that made these pyramids, people like Tesla. What if Tesla, just contemplate this for a split second, what if Tesla, around his era, wasn't exactly as mind-blowingly ingenious as he is today? I think he was, but maybe take him back a couple hundred years when they're building these giant structures in South America that we find that look like they're straight out of Rome, like a cut-and-paste building from Rome that's decaying in by the early 1800s when these things are being photographed, with giant 40-foot doors that you could just push open with a single finger. The amount of knowledge that we have both discovered, developed, innovated, and then lost, or aka had taken away from us, is unbelievable. Isn't it interesting when you watch an old Western? Fictional Western, of course, right? But they have, the writers had this amazing capability of basically saying that what happened in town one, if you just went 30 miles away, town two could have a massacre going on, and town one may not even know about it for a couple months because there's no internet. Maybe no one gets a chance to escape and go over there. Maybe there's a river in between it that makes it a little hard to travel. But today, anything that happens gets spread all over the universe automatically, right? Well, take that mechanism for all of this sacred knowledge that's been lost. But you know, until the printing press came around, which took a few hundred years to get going, nothing's being recorded by just anybody. I mean, yeah, people are writing stuff down, maybe in parchment. Maybe if you had a lot of money, you could put it in stone. But think about how much effort that is. It's a lot of effort for a little bit of information. I mean, you ever seen the Rosetta Stone, even on a piece of paper? The amount of labor to create the Rosetta Stone must have been insane. Now, again, there's supposed to be like dozens and dozens of the exact Rosetta Stone up and down the Nile, but they've never found any of the other ones. That's weird. That's what it says in the Rosetta Stone, that one will be put, this declaration by Ptolemy IV will be at every truck stop up and down the Nile. So everybody knows the new laws handed down by Ptolemy IV because his father was murdered. Where are they? No, not so much. Anyway, I want to say that because I want to make sure that none of this is hard to believe. The guy built Coral Castle. He kept saying, every time someone asked him, how did you build this place by yourself? He says, well, I figured out how the pyramids were built. That's what he said. He never said anything else. But part of that has to be electricity, lightning, stone weight, okay, reducing the weight of a stone so he could move them into place and then just use pulleys to kind of get them adjusted the next day. Always taking them off the truck at night by himself. 110-pound dude if he was soaking wet. Never had a power bill because he had his own power from that wheel, right? If you're like me, you watch those videos of the kids in New York, and you get a little concerned, if not a lot concerned. Holy crap. These kids are going to turn into the pilots that are flying your jets. You want flight safety to stay the same? They're every kid in a car coming at you, no matter where you live. Their low IQs are deciding how much to drink and how much not to drink. They're dating your kids. They're potentially going to get into your bloodline. If you don't parent your children and teach them at the same exact time, they might be your kids. And the thing is kids can be just a little bit smarter than the other kids and feel like they're geniuses. But there's one factor in the United States of America. I can't speak for any other country. But if you're a kid in the United States of America in K through 12, and let's say you're a straight A student, We have something called advanced placement classes you can take, which are supposed to get you credit as soon as you go to college. It's like getting college credits when you're in high school, okay? If you graduate magna cum laude in your school, right? You're the valedictorian of your school, I should say, right? That's a college term before, right? But you will still be the least intelligent human being to graduate in the history of the United States of America. I always like to remind people, you guys have heard it a dozen times if you're hardcore listeners, the average Civil War soldier, if they finished school, got about an eighth grade education from a little farmhouse school. The average amount, the average number of words that they could speak was 12,000 words. Today, if you're an honor student in high school and you majored in English, meaning you liked it and you got good grades, you might graduate with 1,200 words. If you go to college and you major in literature, meaning you're reading lots of books, lots of materials, writing a bunch of your own stuff, they estimate you might double that. Might get to 2,400 words. That's only 20% of an average Civil War soldier. But if you ask people, were we smarter today than we were in the past? Because a child can hold a cell phone and stand on the shoulders of absolute geniuses, they'll say, of course we are. Look what I got. Not realizing you don't know anything about that device. You really don't. You don't know how it's created. You don't know how the phone call comes in. So the reason why you want to get people interested in the topics that we talk about and the other things that you study that I don't even talk about, because if we don't start trickling this stuff down, it doesn't matter if anyone takes over the world and gets rid of all the bad people, we're going to have a slice, a layer in the layer cake of society, a whole generation, if not multiple generations. They're going to be a burden on society. And, you know, some of them will pull out of it. They'll find some love in something that we're talking about, and they'll study, and they'll realize how much they don't know, and they'll get excited about education. But a whole bunch of them won't. And imagine, if you're like me, doesn't matter how old you are, you research a bunch of this stuff, and you may not know all the answers, but you know a bunch of lies, right? And you do all this due diligence, and you do it for 10, 20, 30 years, depending on how old you are. And then at the end of the game, if we don't take back this planet, okay, you will be in trouble with the community at large, punishable by social credit systems, of course, if you don't regurgitate basically the negation of everything that you learned. You will have proven to yourself that some of these things are true. But if you mention them in public, you're a heretic. It's like Burgess Meredith in The Twilight Zone, the obsolete man. I just want to digress for 1 second because this is kind of on target. I was talking to a friend of mine about science fiction content, and I'm naming because she didn't watch much science fiction, hadn't even seen Star Wars, right? So, well, you know, but she owns some Star Wars shoes. And I said, what do you mean you own Star Wars shoes? We don't even know. I never saw the movie. My parents didn't allow us to watch that kind of stuff. It's about my age. So, well, you should go watch it. It's a free country. You're a grown woman. Go see it. Trust me, it ain't the most popular science fiction movie in history because it sucks. Okay, and you're my generation, so you remember the 70s and the 80s. I mean, seriously. She's like a month older than me. So I said, I'm naming a bunch of movies. And I said, because she's like, well, tell me the best ones I can see in order of how you want me to see them. So I was like, blah, 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 put a bunch in there. So then I realized, oh my gosh, just go watch Twilight Zone. Thankfully, she'd seen a lot of Twilight Zones, but she had to sneak it when she was a kid. But Rod Serling, from start to finish, from 1959 to 1965. And on Paramount Plus, you will see the most unbelievably remastered episodes of this. I used to have a lot of syncing issues when I used to put it through my TV, but maybe it's just my crappy TV. A buddy of mine ripped them online. Those episodes will accentuate and reignite in you, if anything has ever gone dormant in you, the very fabric of the value system that is most important to mankind. Meaning, we have a lot of things that they try to fearmonger us and make us worry about, right? And watching Twilight Zones gets right down to the algorithms of what is most important in mankind. I can't say he crossed off every T and dotted every I, but they did stop the show because they essentially said, look, for season 6, we could probably write a lot of episodes for season 6, but I don't know if we can hit the whole season. And so they yanked the product by choice so that it wouldn't deteriorate and have a bad season. That's integrity. Rod Serling wrote half the episodes. Charles Beaumont, Earl Hammer, a bunch of amazing people wrote the other ones. So if you're ever wondering, where should I focus my energy, my efforts? If you can't answer that question, just go find a Twilight Zone and watch it. Because you'll find something in one of them. But Obsolete Man is a huge one. Burgess Meredith was essentially from our generation. But fast forward about 30 years. And now he's being brought into this room because he's an old man. I believe he was a carpenter. Kind of an homage to Christ. And he liked to read books, and he liked the old stuff of knowledge and wisdom, and he wasn't going to surrender to the state, that social credit system that's coming to England soon, already activated in China. That's what it looks like in the end of the product. THX-1138 is the extreme version. Was it George Lucas's first film? And I want to say that these films that are made, certain films, there's always a heartbeat of films that are made which are huge predictive programming movies. Some of them are like THX-1138, way out there. Logan's Run, You Die at 30. Rollerball 1975 with James Caan. Sort of a mezzanine, you know, in terms of the order of things happening. It almost looks like you've got Rollerball goes first in terms of our future, then Logan's Run maybe. But it could be THX-1138, because THX-1138 actually had people over 30, so maybe that goes in between. But once they control society and simply say, you hit 30, you're useless, your little jewel in your palm starts blinking red. These films are out there so they could test the algorithm of what's going on. And it all roots back to this lost history. And I'm going to remind you guys, in Rollerball, in the center of the film, James Caan goes to Geneva to talk to this computer to find out how executive decisions are made, because even that basic process, and executives are basically the all-powerful politicians in the future of that movie. The old man, who's a big fan of him, says, oh gosh, you know, this morning we lost the 12th century. He says, well, what? Because he's not really an intellectual. He plays this game called Rollerball. He says, ah, don't worry, we'll find it. It happens all the time. James tried to get books on executive decisions, and when he went to the quote-unquote library to get his books, all he got were these paraphrased paragraphs approved by the corporation. Everything was cleansed down to basically, it's all we're going to allow you to know. And so James Caan's character, Jonathan Ego, goes, so this is not a library, and you're not a librarian. And what that insinuates a whole lot more than just those lines. It insinuates that he used to go to a library. He knew what a library was. He knew what it was supposed to be and the type of content that he was supposed to have access to. When he asked the supercomputer how executive decisions made, it went into a logical loop and basically self-destructed, probably off camera, but it wouldn't answer it. So anyway, that's going to be us if we don't start trying to help the planet out a little bit. It almost makes me want to walk up to kids these days and simply say, well, you know, you're smart, right? Oh, yeah. Okay, so how many states are in the United States, right? Think of some trivia for your country. They asked this kid in the previous one, like I said, what country is the Queen of England from? Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. So we have a work cut out for us. Hope you dug the episode. I've just been mulling over these photographs, and it does look like there's some real merit to their assertions. The Tartarian movement is probably one of the coolest movements we've had, because it doesn't make you get into tremendous arguments with anyone. It just allows you to say, look at this picture. Isn't this crazy, man? That's a structure in like the jungles of Peru or Brazil, or, you know, like even in China, where obviously you had lots of contact with the West for various reasons. Big, giant, huge buildings, you know. There's even a city in China right now that mocks Rome. It's interesting, right? What could be really going on? Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything's up there. Getting a lot more traffic. Do understand that the site is linked. Most of the videos over to Rumble. I'm going to be creating those chaos reports exclusively on Rumble. That way I can say whatever I want and it won't get censored, okay? So when that happens, those of you who are exclusively on YouTube, I'm not going to make a little video on YouTube going, go to Rumble. You're going to want to get on one of our sites. There's a lot of social media sites, Minds.com, Gab.com, Getter, True Social, and I'll be announcing them there, but they're going to be exclusively Rumble products. If you have a Facebook and you don't mind that whole apparatus, it will be on there as well. But the website's going to also have it, so you may want to just put it in your bookmarks, check on it once a week to see if there's a video up there that you haven't seen. But I'm just going to leave the bumper real short. Just know we have a store with a bunch of shirts. Thank you for those of you who are yanking those down. I finally saw the yoga pants, and they're super cool. Those of you who come through PayPal or Patreon, thank you so much. Again, you get the early release of the episodes. You get my old show, MKUltra Radio, and a few other like insider chats between you and I. So go get you some. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts.